It's time for the movie raid, and tonight we go behind the screens with actor Joe Pilato, played in George Romero's Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead. Hello.
Behind the scream. I love it when people scream, especially after I shot him in the head. Dead. So what do we got happening now behind the scream?
Well, first of all, let's go a little bit of adventure in Dawn of the Dead, because you had what appears to be in the theatrical version of Dawn of the Dead, that you had a very, very tiny scene, but you actually had a role in the uncut version. The extended.
Anybody that wants to find it, you can find it. Dario Argento has, it's called The Black Box. Dario loves George's work so much. He has three different versions of Dawn of the Dead in something called The Black Box. And you can see my full scene in its entirety. I was a little disappointed that I didn't make the American cut when it first came out, but thanks to the Italian, I say that because I am one, Dario Argento, you guys can get to see the full-blown scene behind the screen.
Yeah, and your character in that film, you're a cop. Due to circumstances of the zombie apocalypse, you became a looter.
I was kind of, if I was a cop in St. Louis today, I probably would be on trial for something. Yeah, I definitely became a soldier of fortune. Turned in my badge and became a soldier of fortune.
So now we're fast forward back to Day of the Dead. So where was this located, and how long did you stay as far as filming?
It was shot in Wampum, PA, Elwood City, PA, very small towns, in an underground mine that was used to, at one point in time during the Cold War, to store certain sensitive documents affecting the state of Pennsylvania, and then it became a place where people would store their recreational vehicles or boat for the winter. And, 3-4 miles long, if you went off the beaten track and got lost, you'd be lucky if somebody found you. We'd show up for work every day, pitch black in the morning, and we'd enter the mine, and there'd be golf carts there 2 miles deep into the mine, where the pretty much the permanent set for the movie was. And it was cold, as a witch's pit.
So everything was still there when you got there, including like the old military boxes, ammo boxes, and some vehicle parts and stuff?
No, by that time, all that stuff had been either sent somewhere else or destroyed. I have no idea. Mostly it then became a storage facility for recreational vehicles.
What about the silo scene? Wasn't that part of that too, or was that separate?
Well, that was an actual abandoned Nike base. I can't remember the exact city, but that was not part of the mine, although in the film it looks as though it is the top of the mine, and that's how the zombies got to come down that elevator. But that was an actual Nike base in and around Wampum, Elwood City. I don't know the exact, I can't remember the exact location, but there is a book coming out actually this week written by a guy named Lee Carr, which is a day-by-day accounting of the entire shoot of Day of the Dead. And I believe it's called Day of the Dead. I don't know if it has a subtitle or anything like that, but the gentleman's name is Lee Carr. Can't remember if it's a C or a K, but you can look that up, because I saw him at a horror convention in Pittsburgh last week, and he told me, actually, well, 10 days ago, and he said that the book was due to come out this week. I guess check with Amazon or find out, and that'll give you a blow-by-blow, day-by-day chronology of the shooting, plus interviews and things like that.
Now, when it comes to your character, Captain Rhodes, how did you prepare for that? Because you got the lead role of what we knew later on in the film, that Captain Rhodes slowly becomes insane, even though he becomes an asshole first, but then he's an insane asshole.
Well, first of all, everyone in every character in their own way, some more obvious than others, became insane. Most notably, Dr. Logan, Frankenstein, we called him, really was just going out of his mind. Sarah and, oh my God, I can't remember John Evans' character. I shot the guy in the head. That'll come to me. I'm sorry about that. You know, they were starting to see that Logan was going insane, and they were kind of figuring out how they were going to get out of that booby hatch. And then you had John, that the helicopter pilot's character's name.
Yeah, that's John, a.k.a. Flyboy.
Flyboy, yeah. He was going deeper and deeper into his voodoo analogy, Haitian analogy of life. In a sane way, but in many ways, that whole speech in the Winnebago was kind of an homage, because in the 1920s and 30s, there were about four or five major zombie, I walked with a zombie, white zombie, Bela Lugosi's in one of them, I can't remember the exact titles, but there was a very successful period of time for zombie movies, and that whole speech was kind of an homage to that. You had the radio operator, Jarlett's character, who was drinking as much booze as he could till it ran out. I just remembered John Appleton's, he was Fisher. And Rhodes was insane to begin with. He kind of had the same insanity that Hitler had. It wasn't going to take much to light his fuse at all. Once Major Cooper died and he took over the show, you knew it was going to be a losing proposition.
Yeah, in terms of story, it's actually interesting because of the fact that we know the name Major Cooper, but we don't have no real insight of who he was. He just was just a major that was killed in either by a zombie attack or other means.
It's never been made clear, but it will be made clear within the next 2 years, and that's all I'm going to say about that. That's kind of a behind-screen secret.
Like I said about Major Cooper, it's like we don't know exactly about him, but that's the interesting part of it. It's like you don't necessarily need to have full insight on every single character in this particular film.
Right. It obviously was a government operation, a last chance shot at destroying whatever created this occurrence, which is another mystery in all the movies. It's even a mystery, I don't know if you're paying attention to Del Toro's, it'll come to me. Too many brain cells burnt. Your listeners will know what I'm talking about. Title will come to me, probably, hopefully, in the next few minutes. But it also deals, it's called The Strain, STRAIN. And once again, these creatures appear, but no one has really addressed the why or how of it, you know. And even if we go back to Night of the Living Dead, and that's, it's not answered in the first movie, and it's never been answered. And I'm not sure George wants it answered, you know. I think the most telling clue was some of the PR they used on Dawn of the Dead, the famous phrase, when there's no more room in hell, the dead shall walk the earth. So maybe there's no more room in hell. I don't know. Nobody seems to know.
Hey, who knows? It could be a natural thing. We don't know. But that's what's cool in this film, of Day of the Dead, is that you have a group of scientists and you have military that were originally there to aid the scientists, and you see Sarah is trying to figure out why how it's happening, and then Dr. Logan tries to figure out how it's happening with the zombies, trying to, from a biological view, trying to.
Also, in his own insanity, he was trying to domesticate them,
yeah.
Which in the original long multi-million-dollar budget film, Captain Rhodes was more like a Dr. No figure, and there were people who had armies of good zombies, and there were people who had armies of bad zombies, and there were all these wonderful scenes in the jungle and rounding up the zombies a la Planet of the Apes, but George couldn't guarantee a PG rating, and so they actually made the films stronger than anybody thought it would be, because he big scale, you know, helicopters flying and dropping nets on zombies and fortresses and mass baptisms of zombies and things like that. So he had to cut the budget way back, and that's how we ended up underground. The conflict between, you know, the military point of view going head to head with the scientific point of view, going head to head with the Haitian spirituality point of view, going to Antoine Delayo's character, a Hispanic point of view, because actually Mexico is the only country that celebrates a day called Day of the Dead. So you had all these different points of view trapped in a very small claustrophobic situation, and it just was a collision of time bombs waiting to go off.
You know, like, if you fast forward to the newer horror films, like zombie films, you see the characters are always dramatic, freaking out about this and this and this, but this film, these characters are actually, on the outside, are actually pretty calm. They're like, okay, we're stuck here. How can we make the best of it until we can either get rescued or find a way out?
Right.
Rather than just, you know, yelling at each other constantly and attempting to kill each other, this one tries to make their own home in this cave.
Right.
And try to live with each other as best as possible, even though they can't stand each other for a lot of the time, because the military are trying to get answers, like Captain Rose. He wants answers. He wants it now.
Yeah.
And you got the scientists. Yeah. They're trying to figure it out. They have no idea, but yet they have no equipment to really do this. And Dr. Logan's pretty much the only one that has a significant answer at this point.
Yeah, well, except Logan was a mad hatter. I mean, he just knew it the moment he walked in the door in the mess hall scene with his coat covered in blood and, you know, asking, is there food? Is there food? You know, and that's what Rhodes just blows the stack and says, I'm running this monkey farm, not Frankenstein, and I want to know what the fuck doing with my time, you know. Actually, George has said many times that it's his favorite part of the trilogy, which makes me pretty happy.
And this film in particular is the fact, I think it's the closest, at this time, would be the closest as far as an explanation or insight of an actual zombie apocalypse, because you can see each aspect, like, from the military and, like you said, and the scientist point of view, and it's like they're trying to work it out, and it's like, this is
right.
As close as I've seen, other than World War Z is the only other one that I know that has some kind of an explanation of some kind.
Right. Hopefully, we're not going to reach a saturation point of zombies. You know, I made a joke at the Pittsburgh convention. I said, has anybody seen IHOP Zombies, where you stop in for a stack of hand cakes, you know, or Sorority Zombie, I Ate a Thigh, or Home Depot Zombies, Don't Put the Nail Gun to Your Head. I saw this really terrible movie, I thought, called Zombie Detention. you should look at it if you have
to. I'm totally going to.
You know, you can use your imagination. High school kids stuck in detention, and some of them are zombies. It's just, on the other hand, it's a very brilliant film called Mimesis, which is a virtual reality game that is based on the original Night of the Living Dead. It's called Mimesis, and it's a wonderful film. It's a wonderful film. You know, George is now, I think he's in his fifth edition of his comic book, Vampire Empire, or Empire of Vampires. I got a couple of copies when I was in Pittsburgh. I just haven't had a chance to read them, but, you know, maybe that'll be the basis for his long-awaited next film, you know?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, it would be. It would be comic book style, you know. George always signs on his autograph, he always says, stay scared. It's becoming harder and harder to stay scared at a movie because the world political situation is so fucking scary.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, you just ask yourself, or my plus fuck fans out there, ask yourself, when was the last time that you were really scared, either at a movie or reading a book or something that
40s. Howard Hawks's The Thing, Creature from Another Planet. And then, of course, you go to all of the Universal films that were fucking scary.
Yeah.
But it's a sign of the time as we become so sophisticated and so jaded to gore. You know, I mean, what are they going to make, Saw 13 or Halloween 52? Or we've just become jaded to it, and so much of it is now computer graphic. That hands-on thing that Savini and Greg Nicotero, people like that, you know, a real fleshy craftsmanship. I mean, look at my death scene in Day of the Dead. There was no CG there, no special animation, no, you know, doctoring. That was it. That's the effect. They shot the effect, and that's the effect. It wasn't enhanced. It wasn't, painted over or whatever.
He didn't stick a double in there. He didn't have to make it look like you.
I was stuck in a fucking hole in the floor for 4.5 hours. Yeah, I was there.
Smelling pig guts all day. Well, Planet's Captain Rhodes, did the cave actually influence you in some way of your character?
Well, it affected all of us in so many ways. All of us. First of all, we all got deathly ill with bronchial infections because the dust down there was just extremely bad. I mean, you know, I'll give you a gross example. I mean, after 12 hours, you go up to your room and wash your makeup off and blow your nose, and all this black shit would come out of your nose. The other thing is, because it wasn't a traditional movie set where you go back to your trailer when you weren't working between shots, there was nowhere to go. We had nowhere to go. We had, you know, a little room, and we shot the shit when we weren't working. So in many ways, it made us, as an ensemble, it made us tighter, and we got to kind of read each other's sensibility. And the working conditions, I mean, except for those lucky few that got to go to Florida, I wasn't one of them, but for 8 weeks in the mine, we never saw sunlight. It was winter. We'd get up in the morning, it would be dark, and we'd finish 6-7 o'clock at night, and it would be dark, and we'd go back to the hotel. And in most movies where the environment is kind of artistic creation, we were all stuck. The cast, the crew, the caterers, the gun wranglers, makeup people, gophers, we were all stuck in this really horrible place. All right, you're stalling me now. I'm loading my gun. Come on. Hit me with the shot. saving it for you.
But was there ever any discussion as far as the deaths of the characters? Were there ever any discussion in between you guys who should die and how should they die?
Oh, no. I mean, how Gary Clark Steele, me, of course, Rhodes, wonderful actor who's passed away, Ralph Guerrero, who was Rickles, and another wonderful actor, Richard Liberty, who was Logan. How we died was completely scripted, except for my death scene was the last day of shooting, because each actor had a day to die, because each one of those death scenes were fairly complicated special effects set up. My turn to die, because it was scripted that I would be cut torn in half. That was definitely scripted. And I said to George, I said, listen, George, I said, look, Captain Rhodes is not going to go down without having something to say about it. And he said, well, Joe, you're torn in half. Your esophagus is probably attached to your legs that are being dragged down the hallway. So, well, I mean, what? And I said, well, there's something I think he would say. He said, all right, well, he's being generous. He said, all right, just run it by me. And there were other people in the room, and I was a little embarrassed. I didn't want to say it out loud, so I said, can I whisper it in your ear? And he, big tall guy, leans down and gives me his ear, and I went, choke on him. And he looked at me, and he said, all right. He said, you got it. I like it. I love it. Just make sure you get it right, because we're going to have three cameras cameras rolling, and we only got one take on this set. This is the martini shot of the film. Did we discuss amongst ourselves how, I know that Gary Steele made the choice to make the sign of the cross with his gun. That was, you know, that was his choice. But pretty much the how of the deaths were all scripted by George.
You know, there's a lot of gore in this one compared to Dawn of the Dead. Was that kind of a risk in some factors? Because usually when film has this much gore, it's usually having to go through an ass load of process just to get that R rating or however they go for. Because
there was no issue that there was, they won. That's why the budget was cut down to I believe $4 million, because George never considered it getting rated. It wasn't going to happen, so it was like full speed ahead. You know, you just go for fucking broke with it. And I think that's another thing that that makes it, because the gore, as in so many movies today, gore was relevant to the situation and relevant to the character's conflict, as opposed to the gore being gratuitous. Let's put four girls in a bikini in a cabin by a lake and see how many different ways we can blow their tits off.
Yeah. You know? Especially in the newer horror films, including the zombie films. I think more gore is a bore because that's all it is. There's no storyline. It's just
right,
straight up.
Exactly. That's, you know, there are, as I said, this film I mentioned, Mimesis, actually has probably no gore. I saw this film with Mel Gibson. I think it was called Signs. It was about the crop.
Yeah, it's an alien film. It's a crop.
Yeah. And then there was a film about the guy who had a sense that doomsday was coming. And he built this bunker in his backyard. I'm terrible with names. I'm sure your listeners will know what I'm talking about. And then there was the other one with Matt Damon, where something in the wind was killing people. And you know, as you said, as you pointed out, the gore we see today is gratuitous because it's tied into a very tight, intelligent, articulate storyline.
You don't have to have a ton of gore just to make a successful horror film.
No, but I mean, you know, two examples. One is the original Frankenstein, which based upon Mary Shelley's book, which was called Frankenstein or Prometheus Unbound, you know, a highly literate novel, and that is what allowed Karloff and James White to take off with the film. Or if you look at Spencer Tracy's portrayal, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, again, based on Robert Louis Stevenson's novel, intelligent, exciting storyline with great characters. You know, it's very hard to do. It's amazing when you think of how prolific George has been with all of his, you know, all of his films. Including Monkey Shines and including Knight Riders. You know, he always had a very, very strong story with a very strong outlook on the world, you know, and that's the sign of a great filmmaker.
Even limited of characterization, as far as how they act, how they react, it's not overdone, it's not underdone, it's right there in the moment.
Right, yeah, right, and because he creates a series of wonderful, compelling moments, you know, and I just hope he continues to do it.
Yeah, overall, on the story itself, how'd you react to the final product of this? Were you pretty satisfied of how everything went, even including the ending?
Well, unfortunately, when the film released in the theaters, when it was released, I think it was released around Easter time, I can't remember exactly when it was released, but the critics, especially Siskel and Ebert, hated the movie because everybody wanted another shopping mall. They couldn't get beyond the fact that it did take place in, like, a skyscraper, which actually it Land of the Dead kind of did. The original Dawn of the Dead, all the critics, you know, were just so amazed at George's social commentary by, you know, making it take place in a shopping mall. They were stuck with a cave, and they poo-pooed it. They, you know, we originally got, not in terms of the genre, I'm talking about, as I said, Siskel and Ebert, people like that, but actually, 10 years later, they're both dead now, but one of them re-looked the film and rewrote his review and gave it a glowing review. So we weren't originally notorious people coming out. It was, we made the film and the critics did like it. And it, you know, it took a good number of years for people to catch up to the film. And now, you know, I mean, I do a lot of conventions and people, they bring their kids. The kids are dressed like zombies and they've seen the movie. And it's like they're handing, the genre fans are handing the mantle over to their children. So you have a whole new generation of genre fans that are coming up. And because at that time, even though the success that Dawn of the Dead had, fervor and the intelligence and the largeness of the genre fan population was not that big at the time. There were very, very few conventions. So, you know, it took a while. We're next year's the 30th anniversary of the movie. You know, that's kind of a scary thought.
Yeah, for something that's low budget and to the point where kind of like a make or break moment, this is another major film by George Romero. Having to get it out there is like possibly a huge risk for everyone as far as the acting perspective goes. Even kids could root to this film. Why? Because Miguel ends up being a hero.
Absolutely. And then again, I go back to, you know, different point of views. And did you remember when he opens up the elevator for the missile base, he takes his crucifix medallion and he makes the sign of the cross, you know, and because of his action that Rhodes and the bad guys got eliminated and the good guys got to take off in the helicopter.
You see him at the beginning as, well, you could tell when he first started to be in the military, he wanted to be a strong person, but as you see something like this, that nobody on the face of the earth, if you're still on the earth, he'd even handle this type of situation, and you can tell he's slowly but surely just breaking apart, breaking down. Rhodes and his men aren't really helping too well. The chances are they don't really see him as an actual military figure of any kind. As you see, when he's trying to handle the zombie in the one scene, he lets go of the pole and almost gets his, you know, Riggles killed.
Well, I mean, it also shows the racism of Rhodes and company, because, you know, we refer to Tim's character as a spick, and then when I give Gary the order to punch out John, you know, I say teach this jungle bunny a lesson. It's a definite anti-military sentiment running through that movie, yeah. Which played right up my alley, because I was an old hippie and I had marched against the Vietnam War, so I basically really did not have much use for the military, so it was fairly easy for me to portray them in a horrific light.
And not only that, there are more zombies in this film than Dawn of the Dead combined.
Right, absolutely.
And the fact all these zombies came from different regions, and not just, you know, pussy-looking, disgusting, like, goblin, ghoul-looking type characters, like all you see in zombie films that look pretty disgusting, like they came from the sewer. These are zombies that were infected. You can tell they were infected. You can tell that they were either hurt. Like, one, for example, there's a zombie in there, a military zombie. He has his arms up like something fell on him, but he got bit, and then the zombie left, and he ended up being a zombie, and he's stuck in that position as he walks into the bunker.
Right. And then there's that famous scene where Bub salutes Captain Rhodes, and Logan says, come on, he salute him back, and I say, you want me to salute that walking pile of pus? Salute my ass. And that's another line that I came up with when he was hunting me down in the hallway, and you can actually see it. I'm crawling, and I hit my head against the wall, and it really hurt like a motherfucker. In fact, I almost busted the shot, but I turned around, and I said, you puss fuck. And when the scene was cut, and they were checking to make sure everything was okay, and we could move on to the next scene, the sound guy says, wait a minute, and he says to George, he goes, did he say puss fuck? And George says, yeah, and I like it. Keep it. So, you know, things happen.
It is a possibility that these zombies could be trained. How long? Who knows? We already saw how difficult it can be. Even though Dr. Logan was a crazy man, he had some sense in there. He knew sort of what he was doing, but he was also a butcher, too. He used the body parts of already dead military.
That's what really pushed Rhodes over the edge. But you see it in Land of the Dead as well. The zombies had the ability to go across the river.
Yeah.
And then the moment where one of the zombies figures out how to use a chainsaw, and you know, you kind of see a little bit of the possibility that there could be some signs of intelligent life found somewhere, you know, in this holocaust of madness.
Each one has a phase. Night of the Living Dead, the original, George Romero, you know, there's an outbreak. That's the first step. And then there's Dawn of the Dead, where zombies are just now starting to go other regions. As you can, if you were to combine Night of the Dead to this, no one knows, still doesn't know what's going on. And that's when the cool part is the real military actually had a real role in this film as well.
Right.
And then Day of the Dead, it moves to another, a whole side of the world, bigger and bigger as far as hordes go. And then you look at Land of the Dead, they're starting to get more intelligence. And people, it seems like people have basically given up on trying to just fight them. They just build a city and just live and try to do the very best they can, scavenge this and this, and then just fight off whatever zombies comes toward the city. But the zombies are actually getting smarter, and they don't realize that.
And the other important political point in Land of the Dead, it was only the rich people survived. Only the rich people were able to afford to live in that timeshare community, as it were, you know?
Yeah.
And have the best of food, the best of drink, the best of everything that could be Dennis Hopper's minions could go out, collect, and bring back, you know. And then you have the zombie fight where I see Argento is caught in the ring, you know, and it really kind of almost like the fall of the Roman Empire, dying in its own decadence.
Yeah, and then you go to Diary of the Dead. This is the stage where they're trying to figure out what do they like to eat. What do they really like to eat other than just brains? A little bit in Night of the Living Dead, like you'll see a zombie try to eat a moth or something, and you see Tom Savini's vision of Night of the Living Dead, the remake, you see a zombie eating a mouse head.
Right. All the symbols point some sort of, and that comes out too in 28 Days Later.
Yeah, also a different one.
I think there were two of them. 28 Days Later, and then I forget what the other one was called.
20 Weeks Later. This is
the same kind of thing of stockpiling, and George liked to say that fast zombies suck. you know, and then, you know, the zombies have the ability, you know, to run, you know. And then Shaun of the Dead, which was a brilliant satirical look at the zombie movie.
I thought it was great.
You know, Simon Pegg and I forget his partner's name.
Yeah, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost was in Shaun of the Dead.
Right. I mean, you compare that to this film I mentioned, the Zombie Detention. There's that absolutely no comparison, because Shaun of the Dead was a very well shot. They actually pay homage to my death scene in it. You know, they made a brilliant film from a pretty much comedic. You know, the guy coming up to get his newspaper and not noticing that there's zombies walking all over the neighborhood. You know,
or even the
and
scene where they said that.
the guy gets shot, look through the hole in his body. You know, things like that. You know, nice little moments like that.
Or the Z word, the zombie word. He tells him not to, don't say the Z word. And he goes, why not? Because it sounds ridiculous.
Which is actually funny, too, because the original title for Night of the Living Dead was The Flesh Eaters, you know. And I don't even think they used the word zombie to Night of the Living Dead, which is how it went into eminent domain, because there was some legal screw-up because they had registered the film as Flesh Eaters, and after so many years, there was no Flesh Eater film. It was Night of the Living Dead, and so it went into public domain, which George was on NPR radio about 3-4 weeks ago, and actually most of the interview was about the comic books, you know, and he talked about how it went into the public domain, and, you know, because I have a picture coming out soon, hopefully, Simon West Productions, the people that did Black Hawk Down, called Night of the Living Dead Origins, which is the same story, only it's set in present time in New York City. But anybody and their grandmother can make Night of the Living Dead because it's in the public domain. George doesn't see it that way. We haven't seen a dime in residuals from Day of the Dead. It has nothing to do with George. It has a lot to do with the producers who were just out to screw everybody, which is one reason why there was a remake, so that they could somehow get something back for what they when a film ends up in the Museum of Modern Art, which Night of the Living Dead did 2 years ago, it's a permanent fixture in the archives of the Museum of Modern Art, that's testimony to a great film and a great filmmaker.
Old school horror actually has some real thrills, real scares, and actually had some meaning because they remember it. Nowadays, it looks like a little bit too cartoony. It's like, especially when it comes to zombie films, a lot of the newer zombie films are just way too cartoony. They just kill them for the sake of killing them because they're there.
Right. Well, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood has its great points and Hollywood has its bad points. They'll remake anything because there is. Nobody wants to take a risk with new ideas. I mean, a perfect example of that is, you know, the success the Blair Witch Project had. You know, somebody took a shot, a new idea, as opposed to, well, you know, Hollywood is about formula. If the formula works once, the formula is going to work again. But then you ask yourself, how many times can you see a guy in a fucking hockey mask stabbing people? Or, you know, I mean, how many, the last Halloween movie as compared to the first Halloween movie, which was a great movie, you know, and so, well, it was a great movie, we'll do it this way, instead of it happening on Monday, it'll happen on a Tuesday, instead of it being in the country, we'll make it in the city, and then again, you go back to great writing, Bram Stoker's Dracula, and then you look at the movie Dracula, and you see a great story, an original story, a great movie, or the silent film Nosferatu. There's actually a wonderful film, again, out there, John Malkovich plays Murnau Nosferatu, and Willem Dafoe plays the Nosferatu figure, and I'm terrible, but I'm sure you're a fan, and if you're not, smart the fuck up, because I know where you live now, I know where all of you live now, and I can come and find you at any time I want, so you should be looking over your shoulder at all times.
Is there anything else you want to add as coming toward the Day of the Dead? Is there any other words you'd like to share with us before we go?
Yeah, actually there is. Shakespeare said that we are such stuff as dreams are made of. And 30 years ago, four or five other actors were the stuff of George's dream. It was George's dream, and we became the stuff that his dream was made of. We were performing for a camera, and the only audience when we were performing was the crew. So then when it was released and the public embraced it, the genre fans, in particular embraced it. They then became part of George's dream. We are such stuff as dreams are made of. And I say this a lot. I will end on this note, because genre fans are the best fans in the world, because they're not looky-loos. They come up to your table, they ask, some of them look a little weird with 14 or 15 rings in their nose and tattoos galore, but they ask intelligent questions. They're not just there to get an autograph and a picture. They want answers to their questions, and they know the material. It's not like, oh, I got a picture of Tom Cruise. Ooh, ooh, ooh. They want to know this. They want to know, well, what was that moment like? What was happening there? Why do you think that happened? And without the genre fans, me personally, I would just be stuck on a piece of celluloid. But now, over the last 30 years, I have this extended family, and without the genre fans, we really don't exist. We exist in a film canister, or we exist in a video cassette or a CD, but it's that human contact provoked by George and embraced by the fans lovingly and intelligently that makes this whole ride worth taking. And as I said, you have parents bring their kids, and they're passing the torch, as Kennedy said, to a new generation of genre fans. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So I hope you folk behind the scream of Raid will stay scared and will be demanding of people who present their work to you and ask tough questions, and most of all, have fun. Stay scared.
There you go, guys. Joe Pilato, Day of the Dead.